Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to DragonCast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jaime East, here to guide you through the highly anticipated return to Westeros.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to DragonCast, home of House of the Dragon. I'm your host and maester of ceremonies, Jaime East. Joining me this week for our regular roundup of hot D action are, as always, journalist and writer and the scorched remains of the Hand of the King, Chris Mandel. And this week's very, very special guest. To say we are thrilled to have him is a monumental understatement. This man is one of the stars of House of the Dragon. He was the Master of Laws, Lord of Harrenhal, and until he was recently burned to death by his youngest son, was the actual Hand of the King. Kids, eh? Who would have him? Here in the slightly singed flesh is Lord Lionel Strong himself, Mr. Gavin Spokes. Gavin, how are you doing, sir?
Very good. My feet are still smouldering. There's a little bit of smoke coming off.
Thank you for popping our cast cherry on Dragon Cast.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for letting me pop it.
Oh, it's been an absolute treat. I remember we spoke very briefly on the red carpet when I was filming for Thronecast, and it's always so tricky. And I wanted to talk about this a bit later, is because aside from, I guess, the cast that have been in the press the most, like your Matt Smiths and your Paddies and Reese Iffens and stuff, you generally don't know who you're speaking to. And even so much as we'll have seen, who we're probably going to be kind of talking about for the next 3 or 4 years, I'm not entirely sure they were even at the premiere, or certainly weren't put on the round robin of talking to press or at the any of that. We got Emma and we got Emily and all the gang. But in terms of the kids and grown-up Aegon and whatnot, who I think we're going to meet next week, I don't even remember seeing them on the call sheet. It's pretty crazy. We spoke briefly, but you know, you were pretty humble. You didn't kind of go, "Look, guys, I'm kind of a big deal." You were very good. How's the experience been for you?
Oh, I think I probably told you on the red carpet. It's been extraordinary. It has been. I put a little message out the other day on social media. It's been the job of a lifetime, and I've been so lucky. I've had an incredible career. And I always get to a certain job and go, what's the job of a lifetime? It doesn't get any better than this. But this one really did take the biscuit. It was brilliant in every way. Shooting it, the people behind the camera, in front of the camera, the scripts, being involved with so many brilliant artists was a joy from start to finish, really. And it filmed half an hour from my house, so I had nothing to complain about, really.
Oh, look at that. Perfect. And I mean, it must be, like you say, an actor's kind of dream, because not only is it a great gig, you know, just on the face of it, in terms of profile and all the rest of it, this is you don't think too long before saying yes. But then on top of that, your peers that you're working with are pretty incredible, and the script, you really get to act your bollocks off, don't you?
Yeah. My first day was a small council scene, and it was this scene where we are discussing the succession in Ep 1 when Aemon's just died, and we're all sat around the small council table. And it was my first day, and it was Bill Patterson's first day as well. And we both sat down, and I'd never been on a set that big. That was the first thing. Just I got the tour that morning from Ryan and Mig. They took me around the castle, and I was just like, it would have been cheaper to have bought a castle. I'm sure it would have been, because it's an actual castle. Yeah. And then that was overwhelming. And then I sat down at that table, and there was Reese sat opposite me. Paddy, who is one of my actual heroes, sat the other side of me. And then Bill and David Horowitz and Graham McTavish. And you're like, this, okay, got to step up here. really got to step up. And the weirdest thing is, and my wife always said to me, like, when I did rehearsals for it, I said, I'm really nervous. And she said, you've got to remember, as soon as you start speaking, they do exactly the same thing that you do. And yeah. You've been doing it for 20 years. It's just that we know who they are. So you just got to trust the process. And I kind of stuck onto that and thought, yeah, well, they're just actors too. But you do still shit yourself.
And what a great character to play as well. Chris, you know, we've been fans of Lionel since the beginning. He's, you know, he's a rare good guy, seemingly just kind of there just to do good.
Yeah, one of the few people I felt that wasn't trying to, like, fuck everyone over. Like, he was trying to genuinely give some good counsel, and he got burnt alive for his troubles. Definitely would love to have seen more, and I think House Strong seems like such an interesting house, especially because the survivor, Laris, is so schemey. I mean, Gavin, have you got, like, was there more that you filmed as a family that we haven't seen on the show that maybe got on the cutting room floor?
No, we didn't film any extra scenes. I think the boys did. I think the boys had a scene in episode 3. And actually, it was interesting because it was around a fire with a couple of other children from other houses. There was, like, a Lannister kid involved. And it really showed a bond of the two boys and how Harwin was incredibly protective over Laris. And then we didn't have many scenes together. I mean, probably helpful in Eps 3 to 5 that we don't have that many together because Matt's not that much younger than me. So I think if we were on screen together, you'd have all the fans going, this is just not possible. So I think that's handy. But we did a lot of discussion about us as a family and how we... you know, just came up with little stories about how maybe Laris's mother had died in childbirth. Do they have the same mother? It was a lot of those sort of questions because Lionel had two wives and was quite a fella before. Well, he went to the Citadel and got his 6 links, but after that, he liked his ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something quite biblical about the family because you've got one really brawny son and one...
It's Cain and Abel, isn't it?
Yeah. Physically... Yeah, it's very, like, one is very schemey, one is very, like, physical, and it's interesting which one's won out in the end with what happened in episode 6.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly talked about maybe somebody hadn't been given much love as a child, and was there a bitterness that had come through? But Matt is such an intelligent actor. I mean, Matthew
I'm obsessed with that character. Like, I just...
Yeah. It's a great character.
Yeah, when he sidles up in any scene, I'm just like, oh, shit.
He's just like, proper, you know, if he had a moustache, he'd just be twiddling it all the time, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
There's a little bit of the Terry Thomas about him.
Yeah, but Matthew plays him so beautifully. We have to play everything so sincerely and honestly, otherwise it just does come across as Terry Thomas.
Yeah.
But the writing just leans so heavily into him being...
just an absolute,
you know, everybody talks about it, the little fingers, etc. You know, he has that malevolence that's really dark and underlying, but Matt is such a likable person.
Yeah,
I think that's what brings us into him, the fact that Matthew is so likable that draws us into the character, because if Matt was horrible, it would come through the camera.
Gavin, you also got the honour of being, like, aged up 10 years in episode 6, I saw. So what was that like? You didn't have it as quite as bad as Paddy Considine, but you did.
Well, I said, Paddy, bloody hell. I remember seeing him when we did the first time we filmed a scene together in Ep 6. I was like, fucking hell, mate, you look fucking awful. And he was like, you can talk, where's your hair gone? So, like you say about aging me up, I was like, actually, I was aged down for all the other stuff.
Oh, amazing.
Right.
So I was given a wig. I had a dark, my beard was made darker, and they gave me some more eyebrows. And all they did for episode 6 was whip the hair off and put some grey in, you know.
Now, obviously, Lord Strong is gone. I mean, as far as we know, right?
Cool, I mean, that's brutal, Jamie. I mean, just cut to it. It's gone.
I mean, he's gone. Yeah, he's out. Gav. He's done. Move on. do you think? I mean, Viserys is going to miss him, right? You know, he was a genuinely good Hand of the King, and if episode, you know, we'll move on to episode 7 in a second. But I'm going to call it. It was called Driftmark, but I'm going to call it True Colors because it was just like seemed like everybody in there, all of a sudden, just laid their cards on the table and the true colours were revealed for every character, including Otto, and probably more than anyone. He really kind of like pulled the kind of cloak back and let us see exactly what he'd been thinking. Viserys is in a whole lot of trouble now that Lionel's gone, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think during that whole journey up until this point, he'd always been suspicious of Otto, but because Viserys is a very loyal man as well and wants to believe the best of people, hence why he keeps giving Daemon so many chances.
Yeah.
You know, Viserys's heart is too good to be a king. You know, he's an honourable man as well. So the two of them, like that scene with the two grandfathers watching their grandchildren play, it's heartbreaking to just see that who is going to look out for him in the future? Who is going to really give a shit? And is it just Rhaenyra? Is Rhaenyra going to be the only one that fights for him because he's his brother? They just see him as somebody going to the grave, I think.
Yeah, that scene has become one of the biggest House of Dragon memes, I'm sure you saw. The scene with you and Paddy looking over at the kids playing just before Kristen.
Really? I didn't know that.
It's become a massive meme where there's like, isn't it wonderful seeing my grandchildren playing? And you went, our grandchildren, sire. And it's like, what? You know, it's just like, it's become an actual meme. So congratulations on that.
I've become a meme. I've made it. That's amazing. Oh, brilliant.
What do you make of, we touched upon Larys, what do you make of him? What's his ultimate goal? He's obviously got a lot of baggage, you know, his disability, his kind of like clearly not been the favoured son in the strong household for many, many years. But he takes revenge onto a whole new level, but now he's kind of got that revenge. What do you think is, what's his plan?
I have insider sort of knowledge on that.
Oh, don't, so well, don't like it, no spoilers, yeah.
Exactly. Okay. It's fine. Not, let's just say it's not an exact one that's, say, written in the book or anything like that. I think it's things that I've talked about with Matthew in the past. And actually, I like the ambivalence of what is his motive. I think that's what makes him even more exciting. You know, I've also loved in the series how they've done that brilliant thing of every now and then not letting us see the dragon and just letting us hear the dragon. You know, the whole thing is never seeing Jaws. And when you see Jaws, it's not scary anymore.
Yeah.
But I think with Larys, the more he's kind of spoken about, and we don't know what that motive is, the more dangerous and the more scary he is. And like I think you guys mentioned it last week, but once he's done his family in, there's nowhere else to go, is there? There's nothing else to...
Yeah.
I think you said it, Chris. Like, what do the stakes become now?
Mm. Yeah. I think also with the time jump, it's just... he's just operating in the shadows. And I just kind of think whenever something goes down, like, I just assume he's involved in some way, because his whole thing is actually hiding in plain sight. And when he appeared on the boat in this episode, I was like, he just sort of phantom of the opera and sort of drifted into the shot. And I was like, oh God, what's he planning?
It suddenly was like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's just the deliverer of disaster. Yeah, it's just kind of
like, I love it. It's just good to have an outright schemer who isn't, you know, the Targaryens, I get what's in it for them, but for him, it's like, and it's like Littlefinger. It's like chaos is where you can sort of climb the ladder. And he's fucking loves chaos.
He really does.
He likes
getting
down in the dirty, doesn't he? Whereas Otto, the scheming is cultural, political, and it's very opaque. We can see that motive. But with Larys, it's complicated.
Larys gets shit done. That should be his house motto.
Even when you half ask him, you kind of mention vaguely that the kitchen needs tiling. You come back that day, the kitchen's been tiled. It's like, I didn't want the kitchen. Yeah. I just said the kitchen tiles were looking tired. Oh, I thought you wanted the whole kitchen tiling. Now, before we get stuck into episode 7, here is your weekly reminder. If you're enjoying the podcast, as many thousands of you seem to be, do us a favour. Please like, subscribe, comment, and share it with your mates who might be interested. It really does make a difference, and one day the gods will reward you for it. Right, let's get on with episode 7. So, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind, but in Westeros, an eye for the world's largest dragon is a pretty sweet deal. Chris, what appendage would you give up for a dragon?
I mean, this is the easiest question you've ever asked me, because my eyesight is already appalling and I have to spend so much money on glasses because I have to get such strong lenses. I would happily get an eye taken out, and that seems like a good trade-off for me. It'd be like a seeing eye dragon, essentially, for me.
What do we think of the episode? Gavin, episode 7, Driftmark, started off with, like, I'm going to say the best wake ever.
Yeah. There is so much to unpack out of that episode. I think it's my favourite, but I think, like, you know, you guys are probably going to go on to say, it does feel like it's getting better each week. Mm. And there was so much going on at that wake, the amount of looks. There's hardly any dialogue in it. was there? There were so many people just looking over, and then them looking at that person thinking, oh, Christ, he's here.
I mean, Matt Smith, you know, pound per word, Matt Smith, he's on a right cushy deal, I tell you that. I think he's probably said, he must have said 50 words in the first seven episodes of House of the Dragon.
I think you're probably right. I mean, to be fair to him, a lot of it is in Valyrian.
That's true.
So, poor fucker's...
That might be the trade-off.
There was a very long, you know, that Rhaenyra Daemon conversation in High Valyrian was...
Yeah, what was that in? Like,
was long
three,
and a single... well, that one today as well, when they were when they were just kind of having a natter. It seemed like a single shot as well. There must have been like phonetic Valyrian written on the backs of like Marlon Brando style, kind of on the backs of rocks.
I don't know how they do it. I couldn't do that.
Wake, I thought it was beautiful. The score, big shout out to the score of the funeral was just like amazing. I loved that shot of the stone tombs, because I was like, well, that's not going to float, that's going to sink, and I've spotted a continuity error. I bet there's no there's loads of them down there. That was really nice when it sunk down, and you just saw all the remnants of all of them. I guess it was amazing.
So much detail and so much drama in that first 15-20 minutes. It kind of set it up very quickly without any dialogue. I thought it was beautiful, especially when, I think we might come onto this later, but how the kids, the cousins, went up to each other and there was no dialogue. And it was just a hand came out. And it can be so beautifully tender as well, this story, which is always a shock when you go into the Thrones world. You know, if you don't have that human love, you care far less about those characters, and they're so good at putting that detail in.
It was that handhold and the interaction in the wake scene that kind of struck me that they've done it again, you know, in as much as like Game of Thrones previously with season one, when Neddard got killed in episode 9 and we had the rug pulled from under our feet and it was like, holy shit, no one's safe. This is not what we thought it was. I think they've pretty much done that in this episode again and pulled the rug from under our feet, because we've spent 7 hours watching and getting to know all of these characters. And before we came in, we thought it was going to be all about Viserys and Daemon and Rhaenyra. Then we're watching it, it's like, oh no, hang on a sec, it's all about Rhaenyra and Alicent. And then we're watching it, it's like, oh, holy shit, no, it's not even, we're a generation, you know, this is what the time jumps have been all about, is to get us to the real story, which is about Aegon and all the shitty little kids. They're going to grow, this is where like our next 4 or 5 years is going to be spent with these lots. And actually Rhaenyra and Alicent are going to be the kind of the sage, wise, conniving cows at the top of the tree, kind of like pulling the strings. And that to me was just like a bit of a revelation. It's like, they've bloody done it again. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think this is the episode that really, it all started to make sense to me in terms of like, this is actually a show about the children, and everything we've seen so far is a prologue to what informs them as adults. Because what happened this episode was we saw that Alicent and Rhaenyra's soured relationship has actually bled into the next generation, and they've inherited that sort of trauma and that antagonism towards each other. And that is what the show is going to be about. And we couldn't have started with the kids. We couldn't have even started with them as adults. We've had to see it sour slowly and sort of decay. And so I thought it was really clever. I also thought what was really clever, speaking to the score, the direction, you know, Laena, as an adult, has not actually interacted with most of the cast, and yet you did not feel an absence of grief, or you did not feel like the effects of her death were not felt. It reverberated across everyone. It's really affected House Velaryon's relationship with the royal family. It's affected all the children, obviously, because Rhaenyra's kids think that their father is Laenor, and he kind of isn't. And there was just so much. There's just so much at stake in this episode with this funeral. What does it mean? Who's mourning? Who isn't?
They can't resist throwing shade, can they? Even in a eulogy, it's like they were still kind of like, well, they were true Valyrian. Their blood was thick, and that's what made Daemon kind of laugh out loud. It's like, guys, see, the body's not even cold yet. We don't need to start kind of
body's not even wet yet.
Yeah, it's not even wet yet. We don't need to start kind of twisting the knife on poor Rhaenyra. The line, and as we, you know, as we mentioned earlier on, the line was drawn. There was that great shot from Miguel towards the end and after the accumulation, the climactic scene between Rhaenyra and Alicent. And is it time to choose a side now? And it probably is. I think, you know, are either of you emotionally leaning towards green or black? And also, can we just say, really annoying that it's green and black, because now all I think of is organic chocolate. I think we mentioned that last week. It's just...
Blacks and greens were right there. That would have been so much less associated with fair trade chocolate or whatever.
Fair trade chocolate bought out by Cadbury's. Yeah.
Oh,
well. They had their heads turned.
You haven't seen it in shops for a while, I have to say. It's all about Tony's chocolate.
I'd be furious about anyway. Tony's chocolate, yeah. Where are you leaning, Gavin? Where do your emotions lean? I mean, and I guess, like, you know, affection for Lionel, you've got to be on Rhaenyra's side. That's where your bloodline is.
Yeah, I think if Lionel was still about, his allegiances would stay with the Targaryens, it would stay with Rhaenyra. They're his grandchildren, fundamentally.
Yeah.
So they're his blood.
Did he know that, do you think?
Oh, Christ, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
1,000%. First one popped out, look over at his son.
Mate.
Fuck have you been up to, boy?
I thought you were playing Scrabble. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Me and Lionel just, I love what you've done with this little church here, Your Grace.
Yeah.
With that massive Meccano set. No, I think Lionel's very clear. We know where he would be. Gavin, I just like sitting in the middle now. I just want to watch the fireworks.
Yeah,
suppose I would lean more towards Targaryens and Corlys and what actually who I was really rooting for by the end of the episode was Rhaenys,
right?
You know, watching what she thinks is both of her children gone.
Yeah,
her first
she's had a rough
gone.
Old series so far,
her sitting there and saying, this is you driving for this, it's not me for the throne, it's you bloody men. You know, you're just, you're dicks, all of you.
But that's been there. I mean, I do worry about their relationship now. First, when I interviewed them before, I was kind of like, you guys look super strong, like a sexy couple, still very much in love, kind of this. Mm. But actually now it's kind of like there's a real harbored resentment there about Corlys clinging on to this fantastical idea of something that ended 30 years ago. Chris, part of me thinks that they're going to part ways as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Corlys, I think the pursuit of righting this wrong is going to be what does him in, because Rhaenys has made peace with it. Like, I was overlooked and I'm okay with that. And he's going, they've married both their children to Targaryens and, to their mind at least, ended with both of them dying. Yeah. And I think that's a really... really tough thing to swallow. And then, you know, Rhaenyra's children, everyone knows, are Strongs. I mean, they're bastards, but their father was a Strong. So they've
I'm sat right here, don't forget.
But you know what I mean? It just feels like they've hedged their bets and they've lost, and they haven't even got... I mean, what's interesting about, you asked who's on what side. For me, it's got to be the Blacks. It's got to be Rhaenyra, because that's what the king wanted. And Alicent is the one that I think is lashing out and is the one that is hot-headed, that is trying to... She was the one that, when her son lost an eye, said, I think the only safe thing to do for me is to cut out another child's eye.
Yeah.
That seems to me like the logical thing. And everyone was like, that is not the...
It's
you
not
know,
logical.
Just slap him around a bit.
Even for Thrones, this is... No!
Yeah.
But she was like, well, this is obviously the only way we're going to make her. It's like, you can't. So I think, you know, I'm definitely Team Rhaenyra. But I also think what was interesting this episode was what Corlys said. It doesn't matter, essentially, if the boys are not of our blood.
That's a great line.
We are the ones that will decide what they are. We have our name, and that's all that matters. And I think he's a guy that has sailed around all the seas, and he comes back with all these stories. And he is a bit of a mythology... a bit of a myth maker. You know, he can decide what happened when he was at sea. Yeah. He won't tell people about the time like he got the shits from eating some seafood.
Yeah, yeah.
He will tell people about conquering and all these amazing treasures. And you look at that castle they live in, and it just looks like the sort of tat you'd buy in TK Maxx, you know, these big seashells and
things. Yeah.
But he's like, no, I got this from a pirate and I won it and I killed, you know. So I think it's really interesting. He's like, these boys are our blood and we will decide whether they are or not. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We don't get the DNA test out here. So I thought it was really interesting. I think this pursuit of that is going to be his undoing.
He had two of the best lines in the whole episode in that scene. He said, "What is this brief mortal life if not the pursuit of legacy?" And that, you know, he coined that phrase that you mentioned there, Chris, which was, "History does not remember blood; it remembers names."
Oh. Yeah, it's no mistake that they used those two lines for the first proper trailer. I think it was the first two lines in the first trailer.
That's true. Yeah.
So in the teaser trailer, it was Matt walking through, and he said, "Fire, blood." I can't remember Matt's lines, but in the official trailer that came out a few months later, it was those lines.
I remember
on the top
that.
Of the, yeah.
Amazing. Good knowledge. Well,
quite Shakespearean, I thought. It was very, very theatrical.
Yeah.
And then it didn't take long for Damon to get the horn again. You know, quick stroll along the beach. The lighting was great. Was it dawn or dusk? I could not work out whether we were like early in the morning or just before dark. I think probably early in the morning, I'm kind of thinking, but it was like Coldplay Yellow video, you know, where Chris Martin's like wandering along the beach and it's that blue hue was amazing. Presumably a filter, because the photos that we saw of that were like broad daylight leaked things. So I love the kind of colorist. What do you call it? The grader,
the grading.
The grading on that was just really beautiful.
Yeah, agreed.
But again, I thought the speech from Rhaenyra there was beautiful. It was kind of like it was the most kind of honest I think we'd heard her be. She seems to just really expose herself emotionally to Daemon. You know, that there is undoubtedly a connection there. And actually, incest aside, I think their relationship's actually quite beautiful. I think it's really nice.
Mm. It was a beautifully written scene. You're right. It felt Elizabethan. There was a touch of The Crown about it. It had real... It wasn't as robust in terms of its vocabulary. It wasn't quite as... It felt more delicate than a lot of her dialogue has been before. And I think that was one of the first scenes they actually shot on the whole series. And I could be wrong on that, but I thought it was beautifully played.
It was really nice. There was, you know, Rhaenyra blaming Daemon for abandoning her, you know, and he was just like, "You were a child." And she was, you know, it was just really nice. And I think maybe that was Daemon's first time he'd realised that actually how much Rhaenyra cared for him.
Yeah.
It was great.
I thought it was amazing also, given Emma Darcy and Matt Smith haven't been together on the show. And when they were reunited at that funeral, it felt like a reunion.
Yeah.
It felt like those characters reconnecting. And I think that speaks to casting. I think it speaks to the way that relationship's built over the first episode prior to this. But I thought it was phenomenal. And I think the reason we're rooting for this uncle and niece is because the they feel like equals. They feel like they have been so lonely in these sham or political marriages that they see each other and they're like, no, we are the best match. Like, come on. And I thought, they're so convincing that they make you root for incest, which is
incredible. So weird, isn't it?
You know, let's not count. Let's not, you know, we're not all.
James, let's not be too hasty.
Let's not be too hasty. You know. I've got a cousin.
Was it Stephen Fry once said? He said, "I'll try anything once apart from Morris dancing and incest." So.
And I bet he's tried Morris dancing.
Yeah, I'm looking for the bells in the back of your room and the hankies and the flowers.
But as we, you know, as I said, like True Colors kind of came to the fore, and so there were two speeches. There were two kind of discussions with Rhaenyra and Daemon. There was that quite gentle, romantic one, and then there was the one later on as they were watching the dragon and the ship leave Driftmark, where they egged each other on into not only the kind of twist, or as we were led to believe, the murder of Laenor, but then the realization that of what a force of nature the pair of them would be, and actually deciding there and then to rule through fear and make people fear what they do. Let them think, let them assume that that's what they've done, because that is how they will win, is by fear and people being scared shitless of them. I thought was really good, and we saw a fresh side of Rhaenyra then, didn't we?
Yeah. It's so interesting about all of these characters, so the amount of grey that they throw up in them. And that goes back to George and the books, really. I mean, each of those characters, I think everybody on those pages is so grey and not black and white. And you probably say this every single dragon cast, but yeah, they never do what you kind of expect them to do.
No, They really don't. And that's what makes watching it such a joy. When anyone can go anyway, you know, we would have been equally unsurprised if Rainier had not done that and had decided to stick with Lainor, and that her and Damon had kind of were ships that again passed in the night. We would have been unsurprised at that. And I guess that's testament to that character writing, mm. really. Let's talk about my favourite scene, almost certainly in this episode, but we wanted dragons and we've been wondering when we were going to get the dragon scene. And I was expecting it to be a battle, which I'm sure we'll get at some point this season. But actually seeing Aemond kind of climb up on that beach and stand like tiny little Aemond next to huge Vhagar. And it was just electric. It was just phenomenal. I felt for the first time what it must be like to stand next to a dragon. Do you know what I mean? It was just incredible.
Yeah. And they've really done that on this series. Getting to know these dragons like they're the family pet has been far more interesting than I think I ever found them in previous incarnations of dragons.
Well, you never saw anyone get on one, did you? They just appeared on, you know, and I'm sure budget and technology wasn't what it was 10 years ago. But all those questions that, you know, like Chris, you've mentioned, it's like, well, where do they sleep? Where do dragons shit? What, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. You know, we saw this.
I think the illusion would be completely ruined if you did see a dragon take a dump. And I think it would kill the
vibe.
But we've talked about this before. How does it work? How do you claim a dragon? And I think what we saw in this episode was sheer force of will is one way. Being a Targaryen helps. And little Aemond really just went out there and he took his shot. So Laena's daughters, Rhaena and Baela, thought one of them would inherit their mother's dragon. And this is one of those things where it's like, you can't sit and wait for stuff to happen. You have to take what's yours.
Yeah.
That's what Alicent's taught her kids. Aemond takes this dragon. I mean, the thing that blew my mind was, yet again, Westeros is so advanced in many ways, but they haven't thought of like an attachment to sort of hook you onto the thing.
Because the seatbelt.
There were just like tons of ropes, like really willy-nilly, just kind of like, it was a bit, like a kid learning his shoelaces. It was just a mess.
It was like some sort of knot, some sort of like harness. Because at one point he's just hanging off the thing. He's literally hanging off when it flies up. And I thought, guys, you've almost invented caesareans. Like, you're so close to just inventing the seatbelt. Just please, some sort of lumbar support. Anyway, I thought that whole thing was amazing. I mean, this is like the biggest dragon, isn't it? This is one of the oldest dragons. I saw online, because a lot of fans share like scales models of the dragons, and Vhagar is like twice as big as Matt Smith's dragon, Cyraxes. This is like the big kahuna. And I think Aemond claiming him and having them on Team Green, that is a huge, huge loss. Mm. But it was just amazing watching him sort of just smashing into bits of the castle.
But the first climb as well, where you saw actually how high up he was hanging on. It was it was fantastic. I love
it. It was electric, wasn't it? I don't want to give any comparisons. It's like the first time when you see the starship in Star Wars, the first time in the
Imperial
first shot
starship goes
the
overhead.
Enormity.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the first time I've actually genuinely felt that they were really real. Yeah. I shouldn't say that, but in the other series, you're like, oh, I'm watching a dragon. But now I'm beginning to care about the dragons immensely.
Well, Miguel talks about giving each of them a different animal kind of personality. One's like a cow, another one's like a wolf, another one's like, something or other. They very specifically sat down with the designers and gave each of them a very different personality. I think
you can see that with them. That Matt Smith's dragon is sort of way more serpentine. Yes. It has that incredible long neck.
It's slightly more snaky, isn't he? Longer.
Yeah. And those sort of little hind wings. It's really interesting. And I think you have to do that when you've got so many of them. So yeah, I thought it was really, really stunning. And it's just amped up the tension. You know, they've stole one side of the family has stolen a dragon from the other side. That's just any good.
And why I think this episode in particular, that moment was so important, was it's similar to how in episode one of Game of Thrones, the seeds were planted for things that just continued for the next decade. I think that act that Aemond did is what is going to is what is going to harbour some of the biggest grudges and cause some of the friction that's going to last for generations, I think. Because, you know, we saw the immediate aftermath, which was a pretty kick-ass fight between a whole bunch of kids. Like, they did not fuck about. There were broken noses, there were rocks in the heads, and then, of course, amazing kind of like slash of the eye. Can I ask you, Gavin, what is the fake blood made out of on House of the Dragon? Because it seems very gloopy and lovely.
I couldn't tell you. I could find out.
Is it sweet? Did you ever come across it? Did you get bloody?
No, I saw a load of people with it on. I never really went over and licked their face, to be honest.
COVID shoot.
Waste
COVID
opportunity.
Shoot. Yeah. I'm trying to think. No, I think sugar is involved, yeah. But I could be wrong.
But the use of blood, like, you know, they do it so well, like dripping through the kind of fingers on the hands. It was absolutely fantastic.
The hair and makeup team are exceptional. And they're all brilliant people.
Oh, Connor, producer Connor is saying it's corn syrup usually. So it is, yeah. Like
that would do it.
Edible and probably quite delicious.
I wonder how he knows that. Who's he been stabbing?
Yeah, Connor, how do you know that? Yeah, you've been faking some injuries for insurance claims. He has secrets, he says. And but that scene, you know, that moment of Aemon losing his eye, I think is going to be the catalyst for everything moving forward, because it opened not only his eye socket, but a whole can of worms as well, didn't it? Because it led to just that incredible scene in where was it? In the throne room?
In the throne room, I think.
Which, I mean, it could have been an episode in itself. It felt just brilliant. It was just like so good.
And the great thing about one of those physical impairments is that it will always be a visual reminder. As a torch, Bill Hunsome will always be there to be shown. Look, this is why we're doing it.
It's the hand. It's Jamie Lannister's hand. It's all of those things, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk more about this episode right after a word from our sponsors.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Dragoncast with me, Jamie East. I'm here with Chris Mandel and Lord Lionel Strong himself, Mr. Gavin Spokes. So that scene, let's go into that scene, which, you know, which was, could have been either, it's either the making or the downfall of Alicent Hightower. What do we think? She just completely lost it. My question is Viserys mad or is he just in denial? What, because as his son, as Aegon pointed out, it's just like, everyone knows, look at them. You know, it's just kind of like, and we're all like, yeah, you know, it's like, why are you the only guy that won't say it out loud? Is it because of treachery? Is it because of treason? Is it because of the calamitous effect that would have on everything that he holds dear and is set in stone? Or is he genuinely just going a bit mad and can't see it? What do you think, Gavin?
Well, do you want an answer that I've kind of discussed with people?
Yeah. Be open. I mean, as long as there's no spoilers, yeah.
I feel like, and I wouldn't want to speak on Paddy's behalf, but I have vague recollections of discussing with him that if he lets this come out, then
it's all like,
then everything goes to shit. So it was kind of the former thing you were saying, is like, I'm trying to keep everything together. That's what he's doing the whole series, just trying to keep everything together. You know, one of his last lines in that scene, we are a family, you know, we have to stay together, because he can just see what's coming. And he knows, I think personally, he clearly knows it's not insanity, but he's had to make himself believe it.
Yeah, I think, you're right. It's got, because otherwise it's game over. And what would happen, just out of interest? Rhaenyra would presumably still be the heir, but then she'd almost certainly just get killed by someone. He kind of presumes that Alicent would just do it, wouldn't he?
I think Daemon would probably have a better claim to the throne over Alicent's first son, I think. And he definitely doesn't want that. I mean, yeah, I think I agree with Gavin. I think Viserys has ruled during a fairly quiet, peaceful period, and he's like damned if he's gonna let everything go to shit this close to, you know, he's clearly like not long for this world. He's obviously just trying to hold on as long as he can and prevent them from turning on each other. But it's such a knotty conundrum, because he knows that having a female heir has never happened before and that the people might not like it. But he said earlier, several episodes ago, he said, I never thought I would marry again. I never thought I would have a male heir. So he's made that decision and has doubled down on that decision, kind of out of love for his daughter, I suppose. But it's clear with everything that's going on. I mean, this big fight, Alicent was going for it. And I really thought watching it, she's going to kill one of Rhaenyra's kids. That's what's going to happen. And I think when you see how feral everyone is getting, you think, God, once Viserys is not around, this is going to get bad. It was only Viserys threatening. He said, if anyone speaks of this again, I will cut out their tongues. And he looked at Alicent when he said it, like as if he would do that to his own wife if his back was against the wall.
Can I throw in something in there as well in that scene, which I found really exciting, was the tension between Sir Harold Westerling and Sir Criston Cole, between Graham and Fab.
Yeah.
I mean,
was that little look.
Those tensions. And
what did you make of that look? Because, you know, there was the moment where Alicent demanded that Criston take one of the eyes of Rhaenyra's children. And Criston quite rightly said, I'm your protector. I'm not your kind of like, you know, your gun for hire. And he got given a little look, didn't he? What do you think that look was? Was he saying that was the right call, or you twat, you should have done that?
Well, I would just say that, yeah, I think it's really interesting. They're Kingsguards, right? They're the Kingsguards. They're the Sworn Protectors.
They had a bad episode. They were bad.
Like, where's the line, right? Because also, like, Alicent is not the root. She's not the king. She's not the queen. She is the queen regent, right?
Queen consort,
married to the king. That's different.
Come on,
queen
we should consort, know that after the past so few it's weeks. Like, bloody hell, Chris.
Oh, has anything been going on with our royal family? I haven't noticed. I've been on holiday. It's interesting where Criston Cole's loyalties lie, and I think we saw for the first time that he's not just an attack dog, is he? He's got.
So what did you make of that look then between the two Kingsguards, Gavin? Was it a look of approval, or actually that was a bad call?
I don't think I can speak much more on this, because there would be spoilers. I think the look of just knowing that there is issue and conflict, and whether it's disagreement or approval. I think there's too much to be, there's no, like you say, there's no shots in this ever wasted.
No.
So the fact that those two were highlighted at that point is a reflection of like, okay, well, where the hell did the Kingsguard's allegiance is going to fall in?
Yeah.
It's because the Kingsguard is.
Which suggests that at some point there's going to be a standoff, and some decisions are going to have to be made, one would assume. You don't need to say anything more.
Exactly. Yeah.
We saw in Game of Thrones that they were, the Gold Cloaks ended up being loyal to Littlefinger, and they betrayed Ned, didn't they? So there's always someone paying someone. And I think what is probably not clear at this point is who at the court has got greater sway over them. My feeling would be that Otto is probably the one who is giving them more money, or like feeding them. I don't know who Master of Coin is in House the Dragon. That was obviously Littlefinger in Game of Thrones.
It's Beesbury.
Okay.
So Bill Patterson.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. So, you know, it'd be interesting. That's kind of where you follow the money and you might find out who is loyal to who.
We'll come on to Otto in a second, but, you know, let's just talk about Alicent for a minute, because she really, like you say, she took a shot. she has in the best slash worst possible way. It doesn't feel like there's, you know, there's no going back between her and Rhaenyra now. Rhaenyra, you know, and I think Rhaenyra was happy that it had happened. She whispered in her ear and, you know, now they see you as you are, which was just like, and that's when Alison was just like, oh shit. It was a real kind of pulling of, it was Scooby-Doo pulling the mask off, wasn't it? At the end, it was just like, ah, there's your real Alicent. And, you know, and if it hadn't been for Aemon saying, do not mourn me, mother, it was a fair exchange. I lost an eye, but gained a dragon, which was a great line as well. Then it felt like he kind of saved her from that. But she's, feels like she's really fucked it with Viserys. You know, like you said, Gavin, there was a, you know, he was just like, when he questioned Aegon and Aemon about the origins of the rumor, you know, he realized that it had come from Alicent and that she'd been feeding her children with this treacherously awful lie. So she's almost out of the will. And not only that, but she's now made herself a sworn and very vocal enemy of the heir apparent.
It was interesting when he went over to because Aemon threw Aegon under the bus and said it was him. Yeah. He told me. And he was like, what the fuck?
But that's classic. That's classic brotherly. That's a classic brotherly tactic.
Yeah.
The amount of times my brothers have done that to me. Yeah.
Yes, quite. Well, I don't know, but I assume because we've all got brothers who do that. But when Viserys went over to him and said, look, you know, who's told you this? And I was like, Dad, we all know it. Yeah. And him standing up to his father as the king, is that the first time we see him turning into that conversations he's had with his mum when he was caught wanking off at the door? Yeah. When she says, you're going to be the king. We're preparing you to be the king. And is that the first time he's gone, look, if I am going to be the king, I need to fucking stand up to the present king. Yeah. So that was a nice little exchange as well. Again, it's these little steps they add in. It's just such clever writing.
Yeah, that's true. This is going to be the longest episode ever, and I'm breaking my rule of a podcast episode being over an hour long. But I make no apologies because there's so much to get in. We saw an amazing wedding. You know, Daemon and Rhaenyra got married, and actually it felt like a wedding that was full of love and amazing dip-dyed cloaks. Just a big shout out to the costumers there. That was a really kind of visually striking kind of wedding. But I genuinely felt pleased for them. They felt like they deserved and wanted to be together, which you don't often see.
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful, actually. And I think the ritualistic blood on blood thing, it was really gruesome. But it feels like they're both entering a bit of a new phase. And I think for Rhaenyra, she's been quite passive since we last episode. It's all been very like, oh, I don't know what to do. And she's now gone, no, do you know what? The dragon's woken up. I'm going to be weird. I'm going to be a bit of a freak. I'm going to scare people. I'm going to marry my uncle. And like, people are going to talk about me, and that's a good thing. I can go and scare them shitless. And I thought it was really, really interesting that they're kind of like doubling down. And I thought, I thought it was beautiful. And they just seem like such a good match in a lot of ways. So what I think will be interesting is whether they have children. Like,
well, yeah. I mean, I mean, looking at the cast list, I'm not entirely sure they do, but who knows?
I hope there's some, you know, because sometimes there's characters, like we've had like Baela and Rhaena and Laena. I want like, you know, and every now and then you get like, yeah, like a sort of Jason or like, you know, I want them to have like, I want Chris. Chris would be nice. Nice, easy name.
Another Jamie. Another Jamie.
Yeah. Jamie would be good.
But not another Huey, Dewey and Louie, please. Yeah.
Bob. Connor says Bob. Bob Targaryen.
Bob Targaryen. That's great, isn't it? Yeah, it's just like, oh, mate, I heard you got some plumbing doing. I'm Bob Targaryen, mate. Yeah, 5 stars on Rated People. Yeah. But
that, the soldering's excellent.
His soldering's excellent. Dracarys. Look at the seam on that, mate. Fucking hell.
We bring out the baby dragons for the soldering.
But that ceremony was edited in a signature Game of Thrones style, where there were three things happening at once. We saw the wedding, which was the accumulation of this conversation that was going on between Daemon and Rhaenyra, where they were saying one thing but meaning another. And then we saw the event of Laenor's apparent murder at the hand of his lover, and the anguish and trauma that the Valyrians suffered as a cause of that. It was a beautifully pulled together kind of trio montage thing where as it just slowly unfurled itself to you. And actually, I still didn't, until Lainor got on the boat with his buzz cut, still had no idea that he was still alive. I thought, my God, that boyfriend really is a fucking prick.
Yeah, I thought we stood behind Carl. We liked Carl last week. And then I thought, oh my God, he's just like killed him for no reason. I thought it was really good that they showed us them getting on the boat, because I could see a situation where they didn't show that. But I'm really glad they did, because when I watched it, I rewatched that like a couple of times, because I was like, wait, Daemon's convinced Carl to kill Lena. And then and then you realize, oh no, they've done what Kristen wanted Rhaenyra to do, which is to abandon their titles and just run away. And she rejected that. Lainor's kind of gone, do you know what? We can't win. As long as this legitimacy thing is going on, like, I just want out. And I thought, yeah, fair play. I thought anytime Daemon puts his murder cloak on, anytime he puts that on, I'm like, shit is about to go down. This is going to be
good. Like, so, you know, it's like a really bad disguise, isn't it? It's just like, you know, when Robin Hood kind of like puts on the kind of like old hag's cloak to kind of go begging in the cartoon.
Yeah.
It's just like, see you, Robin Hood, mate.
It's like a celebrity with a hat or the cap on.
Exactly that.
Oh, you can't recognize me.
Leonardo DiCaprio in Starbucks. Yeah, exactly.
He said that always wearing a cap, but that's because I'm bald and I've got stupid hair. Here's a little thing for the funeral. The wedding between Rhaenyra and Daemon. Did you clock who one of the maester was who was stood
right,
there?
Right, so I was going to bring this up. I think I've just sussed it. It was Phil Daniels, right?
Yeah, the legend that is Phil effing Daniels.
I saw him in the credits, and I was like, "Shit, where was Phil?" So that he's in it? Is he just in it for that episode? Do we know, or is he now a maester that's going to be brought forward?
I think if you're getting Phil fucking Daniels on board, I think he's probably going to get a bit busier.
Good, that's what we like to hear.
He's just a man.
He sometimes feeds the dragons too.
Very good, Jamie. What? Very good.
Come on.
He's here all week. Try the veal.
Wow.
Chris, that was a reference to Park Life by Blur, which I think was released probably the year before you were born. You know, sometimes feed the dirty pigeons and the sparrows too. Gives me an enormous sense of well-being. You must have heard that line. Come on.
I have, but I'm just trying to put two and two.
So Phil Daniels is the guy that sings that in Park Life.
Wait. Okay, the guy from Park Life
is Phil Daniels.
Oversaw the wedding.
Yes, correct.
Well, he was stood at the side with the children.
Right. An accessory to the Targaryen on Targaryen action.
Correct.
Essentially.
Correct.
That's so weird. Yeah, that really did go right over my head as a dangerously young person.
Disgusting. I absolutely just, disgusting.
Yeah. Sorry.
How much in the writing, I don't know if you've ever spoke to Miguel or to Ryan about that side of it during it, do they go back and replant those seeds? You know, how linearly do they write the episodes, do you think? Do you think after a while they go, actually what we need is a little exchange between Viserys and Aegon to kind of like, to reinforce that. Let's go and put that in episode 7 and because that will foreshadow. Did you ever have a conversation like that with them?
Yeah, quite a few. I'm pretty chatty with quite a few of the writers on it. And they are balls deep in writing at the moment. But they spend a long time around that table discussing outlines of episodes, outlines of series. They each go away, write those episodes, and they come back and then go through that linear of how they then tie in each of those individual stories throughout. What I found fascinating is when we shot, there would be like, I mean, I can't speak for maybe Paddy, Matt, Millie, Emily, top 5 or 6 in the cast. I mean, they had some line changes, but we didn't often get big scene changes that were sort of thrown in. The new scenes were chucked in because they thought, oh, we need a bit of this, we need a bit of that. Sometimes there'd be like an odd line or maybe an odd shot. They thought, oh, you know what? We need to pick up the narrative of Aegon here, or, you know, that would often happen in the room when we're shooting. But those scripts arrive. They're pretty much word for word how it comes out. And I was given the scripts, I don't know, maybe April or May, maybe May of 21. And not much of them changed until I finished shooting in the following February.
That's confidence for you.
Isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is this the point of no return for Alison? What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, they're flying their flags at this point, right? They're digging in, doubling down. Last episode, Rhaenyra said, why don't we marry one of my sons to your daughter, Helena? Which he said, we'll think about. And we found out in this episode that Alicent's marrying her son to her daughter. Aegon is marrying Helena to kind of strengthen the line, I think, but also to prevent Rhaenyra sort of marrying into the family. And I think, yeah, I think it's the point of no return because she's doubled down. And I think the reason she's able to get away with behaving like this is, as we said earlier, Viserys is still the king. He is weaker than he's ever been. Aegon is standing up to his father. I think there's a real, like, turning point coming. And I think she's going to have to double down on this because it's kill or be killed or conquer or be conquered. It's something like that. And I think it's really hitting
she's
a boiling point now.
Very few allies. In fact, she's only got two allies from what we can see. Larys is one of them. And then someone who made a welcome return, maybe not for Viserys, but certainly for the audience, Otto Hightower came back as Hand of the King. And seeing as we've got previous Hand of the King, the kind of interim Hand of the King with us.
10 years, mate.
You did 10 years, actually. You did 10 years. 10 years is interim. Not shabby. 10 years is not too shabby.
10 years. I lost my hair in that job.
I've lost a part of blood, mate. Give us a break. Yeah. And we thought that this week's wisdom would be all about Hand of the King. So if you'll excuse me for one second. The Hand of the King is chief advisor to the Lord of the Seven Kingdoms and is the executor of the King's commands. The Hand's typically seen as the second most powerful man in the realm. However, many Hands have had the reputation of being the true power behind the throne. Many see it as a challenging role with great responsibility. A popular saying goes, what the king dreams, the hand builds. That's a good saying. But the lowborn version is much more colourful. The king shits, and the hand wipes. That ever happened, Gavin? Maybe off camera. Maybe off. Well, is it, Viserys only got one hand, remember? So, you know, if he was steadying himself, maybe you were there with the Andrex. The hand's duties include commanding the king's armies, drafting laws, dispensing justice, and generally managing the day-to-day running of the kingdom. The hand also sits on the small council and will run the council if the king isn't present. The hand may also act on behalf of the king if he's indisposed and even sit on the Iron Throne while doing so. The badge of office always includes a hand, and each appointee can design his own. Now, during the conquest, King Aegon I Targaryen proclaimed his half-brother, Oris Baratheon, to be my shield, my stalwart, my strong right hand. Because of Aegon's description, Oris is regarded to have been the first hand of the king. In the ultimate irony, Oris resigned after losing a hand in the First Dornish War. Quack, quack, oops. Many hands have achieved greatness. Lord Osmond Strong was the hand that oversaw construction of the walls of King's Landing, and Lord Roger Baratheon was seen as the true power behind the throne while serving under King Jaehaerys. But for other hands, the role's been a poison chalice. King Maegor the Cruel executed his hand and own father-in-law, Lord Lucas Harroway, and his entire family after his daughter, Queen Alice Harroway, was accused of infidelity. Infidelity seems like quite a tame thing to be accused of in Westeros, but there we go. Sir Lionel Strong served King Viserys Targaryen wisely and with honour for over 10 years, as you rightly said, Gavin, before being tragically burned with his son Harwin at the recent fire in Harrenhal. The fire was blamed on the curse of Harrenhal, but other non-mystical suspects have been rumoured. But as of yet, the true culprit has not been identified. Sir Otto Hightower now steps back into the position he formerly held to once again serve the ailing King Viserys. Whether or not Viserys will be the final king that Otto serves, only time will tell. And yes, we're ending it. I'm saying only time will tell. Moustache twiddling. How does that feel? A good line, Hand of the King is a good position to have, isn't it, in Westeros? It's pretty, I can't think of a kind of modern day equivalent, certainly not in today's government. You're the puppet master pretty much, aren't you?
Yeah. And I think during a time where a king and, I mean, you can see it when Lionel and Viserys are watching the grandchildren, you can see that these two people have now become friends.
Yeah.
You know, they've become quite pally and they trust each other. There was no, Lionel had no agenda. I think everything changes when a hand has his own agenda or their own agenda.
Yeah. No, you're right.
That's when it becomes blurry.
But they have to be, they have to come close, don't they? Because because, you know, everything is exposed from, you know, we saw the only person that really knew how ill Viserys was at the beginning was Otto. You know, he knew about Daemon and Rhaenyra early on and had to have... you're the one that has to have the awkward conversations, right?
Yeah.
Now, Otto's back. And there was always, whilst you were still scabbing over, he was already there putting the brooch back on his cloak. he was always quite a tricky character to work out. He seemed to be relatively noble. He certainly, we knew that he was very keen on Alicent and Viserys marrying. Wear your mother's dress was the classic line from. Stick on that dress
with his head down, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful choice from Rhys. Great. Just, your mother's dress.
Lovely. And so we knew that there was a sadistic side to him, but not until he visited Alicent, where you thought he was going to give her the mother of all bollockings. And in fact, it was just like, you're on the right course. You have impressed me. I never knew you had it in you. This is the way to go. It was a bit of a kind of like, holy, whoa, okay, holy shit, this is new ground. What did you think to that, Chris?
Yeah, I thought he said something to her which was like, I didn't know you were capable of this, or I didn't know you had this in you. And she showed a side of her that he maybe didn't even know was there, which possibly sort of is why he married her into the family, just to sort of like use her a little bit, and now maybe sees that she's a player in the game in her own right, and she'd actually be quite good at this. And I think, I think it was really fascinating to see. I mean, I would love to see more of Rhys, because I just think he's such a wonderful actor. And Otto has not been in a lot this show. He's kind of been around. We haven't got a lot of time with him. So for quite a few weeks, I've been saying, I think he's genuinely quite a good person. And I sort of stand by that in a way. But since he's become a grandfather...
What do you mean you stand by
like
it?
He's like looking out for... Well, okay, let me just clarify. So far, he's been looking out for number one, which is what everyone does. What I think has changed is that he's now got grandchildren who are, in line to inherit.
He's got actual skin in the
game. And so now I think there's a sense of him being a little bit more manipulative. Not that he wasn't before, but I think, again, it's like these people who aren't Targaryens, in my sort of take on it anyway, is that they're sort of like very powerless to fight against these like superpowers. And now there's a sense that he's kind of in... His children are kind of part Targaryen. And I think he's suddenly like, actually, I can swing this back towards me. And I think we're starting to see him potentially like counseling his daughter on how to sort of be a bit of a schemer in her own right. That might have been happening during the time jump or since he came back between episode 6 and this one. But I think it's really cool to see Alicent being a bit of a schemer. I think it sort of suits her in a way, actually.
Well, I was just going to say to what Chris was saying about Otto's desire, and is it a personal one? In episode 3, there's this brilliant scene between him and his brother, who's actually the lord, the older brother of the Hightower family. And he says to him, look, you've got a son who's a Hightower, and he fundamentally could be the king. He's the firstborn boy. So a Hightower can be king. And I think, for me, I think there's a shift. It's like, holy shit, yeah. Because the Hightowers were one of the great families of Westeros. Yeah. Old Town was still seen as probably the greater of the two between King's Landing and Old Town. And I wonder how much of it is personal. You're right, there's certainly an investment because there's his own blood and flesh. But how much of it is to do with this fucking thing that men are obsessed with legacy, which Corlys banged on about.
Yeah.
So there, I think there's a dual motive maybe going in there now.
Yeah. I mean, Alicent was on the brink. She was remorseful. She was like, I've ruined this. I've disgraced myself. I've ruined Aegon's claim. It was Otto that pulled her back from that and said, no, his line was, we play an ugly game. And now for the first time, I see you have the determination to win it. And then gives her this amazing lesson in politics, sacrifice, firepower. Vhagar on our side is worth 1,000 eyes, which is just like fucking great line. And it's true. The Hightowers now have a dragon.
Absolutely.
That is something, not only a dragon, the biggest, oldest dragon. That is pretty terrifying, isn't it? And a note, as you know, Connor is the oracle of all things House of Dragon, and gets me out of more scrapes than anyone watching Thronecast will ever know. Helena predicted that Aemon would lose an eye but gain a dragon. Is she a dreamer?
That was in the last episode.
Is she a dreamer?
Right? Episode 6.
And that's what, and we've spoken a brief time, and Gavin, I'm sure you know this, but so no spoilers, but and I've mentioned this a few times, is the one element of Thrones world, the Thrones universe, that I've been missing is the magic element, is that is the warging, is the Bran, is the three-eyed raven, all of those kind of those little things. I really kind of like loved those because it gave it. It didn't matter then in terms of war. It didn't matter how strong you are if someone can warg or someone knows or has visions or if there's a witch or a smoke baby or whatnot. What do you think? Could Helena be a dreamer? Does she have possessed those skills? Is it the first time we're going to see that? What do you think, Gavin? Am I teasing the spoiler out of you too much there?
Yeah, you definitely.
Okay,
are.
Fine. There we go.
To be fair, there is only so much I know of what's going on in the future. But I agree with you. There is a certain amount of that magic. I want to come.
Yeah.
I hope it will come. Yeah, yeah. It might come. It might not come.
It has to, though. It exists in you know, the wall is there. The children of the forest are there somewhere. The people are warging and the three-eyed raven's still there somewhere. You know, all of these things are in the world. We just haven't bumped into them yet.
But the beautiful thing about this world is that slow burn. You know, it's been a slow burn to get us to the point of now we see a civil war about to start.
Yeah.
It's taken us 7 episodes to get there. Will it take us 7 episodes to get to magic again? Will it, not 7 episodes, 7 series, who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I have no idea what they've got lined up or thinking of in the future with other series, but there is definitely so much food to be munched on.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a very exciting theory that I saw on Twitter. Jamie mentioning warging. So in episode 6, there was a couple of times where, well, we've seen them in a few episodes, these rats scuttling.
Oh yeah, someone mentioned this, didn't they, to us on them?
There is a theory that I saw online that is that Larys Strong, because how strong are one of the oldest families and where they're from in Westeros, there is a lot of weirwood trees and that sort of thing, is that Larys is able to warg and he wargs into the rats in the castle to get dirt on people, which is a little out there. But isn't that, because I keep seeing these rats and I'm like, you know, Gavin said this, not a shot is wasted.
There was also a shot.
With all these rats.
The spider being hidden in the oyster shell as well was a curious kind of.
That's what Helena said. That,
they did that. You saw them doing that at the beginning. At the wake, Helena, I think, was hiding a spider in an oyster shell. So, you know, again, you know, she predicted Aemon losing Iron Gate. Was she casting a spell? Was she doing something, you know?
Yeah, there's something about her that's very intriguing.
Because she crushed the spider, didn't she?
I think, she kind of put the spider and then closed the shell on top of it. I don't know whether it was crushed or just... But yeah, like you said, not a shot wasted. So that clearly means something to someone, somewhere. Loved it. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We'll go through. We've had so many kind of people write in and comment, and we've always forget to kind of say, first of all, to say thank you, but also to kind of give a shout out to your predictions and your thoughts. Chris mentioned one there about the rat, about potentially about Larys being a warg, and people have had similar thoughts as well. Matt Scott, who actually used to work on and Thronecast, actually, is an editor. This is how much people that work on Thronecast love Thrones, is that they write into the podcast years later. So thanks, Matt, saying loving house. Oh, I'm not going to get Steve Wright and read out all the compliments, but he said, here's a speculative shout. Wonder if a younger Melisandre will make an appearance in this series. She's potentially the only Game of Thrones character old enough to. It'd be cool, wouldn't it? I think she's from somewhere east, like Ashai or somewhere, maybe a Triarchy-related sorceress. So yeah, he's right. You know, Melisandre just knocking around somewhere. Lisa Fury said, I can't handle another time jump. Well, Lisa, we think there's another one next week.
Apparently the last one, there was an interview with Ryan about season 2 on Variety, and he said there's no time jumps in season 2.
Which leads us to think, so we're going to see Adol, Dagon and Aemond and...
Well, late teens, early 20s, I guess,
But it's probably with the cast that will take it forward for seasons ahead, I would imagine.
So
just sit tight, Lisa. You'll be through it.
Someone also told me this morning that we talked about the intro most weeks, that when someone dies in the show, in the intro, their sigil gets flooded with blood. So Lena, her sigil, hers and Matt, you know, because they sort of branch out where their kids are, is kind of filled with blood. So I think when we have a jump in next week, when people have grown up and there might be more kids, or that, you know, there'll be even more. I mean, I find it impossible to keep track of that intro, but there is stuff there if you can pay attention.
I think the confusing thing is because in Thrones, it was all just houses, whereas actually with this one, it's actually individuals. And I think it's quite difficult to know. Everyone's got their own like trademark moniker or kind of like logo, and their branding's a bit similar for me. It's quite tricky to keep a cap on.
Good idea.
Claire Mullins on YouTube said, the way Larys picked a flower when he said to Alicent, "I know you'll reward me," I took that to mean that once the king is dead, they'll marry. That's a good theory.
That is juicy.
Liv's Viola, good name. Love the show. Oh, no, I've done it. Sorry. Prince Damon, the rogue prince, is perfect. My favourite character, Matt Smith, is just superb. I don't think you'll find many people disagreeing with you there. What else have we had? So Davina Allison on Twitter said, started listening to Dragoncast about people who we think we shouldn't be rooting for but are, and thinking about how many parents are now regretting calling their child Khaleesi because they didn't wait until the end of Game of Thrones. So if you've just called your called your kid Larys after episode one, you know, I think, you know, there's going to be a few Ottos who are going to get kicked in the playground in about 15 years' time.
Stay safe, stay strong, stay with Lionel.
Exactly. Blair, strong, you know, I mean, whichever, you know, both. Exactly. Right. You know what we need to do now? We need to look ahead at yet another time jump. Let's all take a moment to sit back and wash ourselves in next week's teaser for episode 8 of House of the Dragon.
As Hand, I speak with the King's voice on this and all other matters.
Tomorrow, the Hightowers land their first blow.
Those vipers rule in my father's name.
To King's Landing, then. The Sea Snake has taken a grave wound in battling the Stepstones.
Who will take the Driftwood throne?
The crown cannot stand strong. The House of the Dragon remains divided.
This is a matter of blood, not ambition.
This is a trap.
Nephews?
The threat of war looms.
Holy shit, I know I say that every time. It looks like it's going to be quite sad. I think clearly Viserys is gone. Hopefully he gets a fitting goodbye. Sounds like Corlys is not looking too strong either. Looks like, so we talk about war. Presumably that's between the Valyrians and Targaryens by the sounds of it. There is claims going everywhere. I'm sure I saw a shot of the murder cloak as well at one point.
I saw the murder cloak and thought, hell yeah.
What do we make of that? Yeah. I mean, Gavin, you're exempt from discussing this because you've read the script. You know exactly what's going on. Chris?
So a couple of things, Viserys' voice is in there. Very, but we saw Alicent and Otto both sitting on the throne. Yeah. Rhaenyra said the Hightowers have dealt the first blow. So I think they're probably governing in his stead, which is obviously causing all kinds of problems. That looked like Corlys' brother, I think his name is something like Vraemond or something, who was sort of there with them, Vaemond, according to producer Connor. Obviously there's talks about who gets Driftmark, I suppose, if he's kind of on his last legs. Just a real sense of it all about to kick off. I also saw a dragon egg. Yeah. That was worth noting.
So that would be the dragon egg that they were waiting for one of the children, right?
I presume so, but then I don't know how long they take to hatch. I don't know. It's like,
well, if you're Daenerys' dragons, centuries.
Exactly. I thought it looked great. It's really, you know, Rhaenyra and Daemon are returning to King's Landing. Obviously, some time has passed. Interesting thing I want to note about the kids: Aemon with the eye patch has now got long hair. Aegon
has had it cut
with two good eyes. 20/20 vision. Aegon, as he's known, has short hair now, which is a bit of a switcheroo.
Yeah, but, you know. I do like the old the different Targaryen bobs. That's for sure.
Yeah, but I do think that it's hard to kind of like, I just want to see like a chart of the ages of them and who's...
But it's kind of, producer Connor's pointed out, Aegon looked way younger than young Aegon.
Yeah, yeah. The guy with long hair, Aemond, looks about 35.
I don't think that's actually the case though. I think there is, off the top of my head, I think there is quite a big age difference between the two of them.
Oh, really? Yeah, wow.
Right.
In real life.
Yeah. The kids look great though. I thought the Jason, Luke, Rhaenyra's kids, yeah. Obviously a lot grown up. And I suppose Joffrey will be quite a bit older. We might see him now.
Can I just say, it doesn't matter what show it is or anything. An eye patch just looks fucking boss, doesn't it? It just looks it fucking really does. Nails.
It really does.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm just thinking though, baby Joffrey was like the only person not invited to that funeral in episode 7.
Well, it's a bit like William and Kate not inviting their youngest to the Queen's funeral because he kind of kicked off, didn't he, at the coronation, started pulling faces.
He'd be better behaved than Viserys looking like spoiled milk.
That's true.
He managed to get out there.
Oh, dear.
That's not me. That's brilliant.
Paddy, if you're listening, I apologise.
It does look like he moisturises just using cold ready breck.
Yeah, porridge. It looks great.
He had to get in the chair about half four in the morning for that.
I bet he did.
Oh my God.
I bet he did. I bet just getting up at half four in the morning gets you halfway there, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, Gavin, thank you so much for coming on, mate. It's been an absolute honour and a privilege to get like your insight and your opinions. And I just love speaking to people that have been on and been in the show and have got as much passion and kind of and love for the universe as we all have. It's not always the case, so it's a delight when we meet someone like you, buddy.
Oh, cheers, thanks very much, that's very kind of you to say. And to be fair, it didn't used to be like that. It's grown. It really has grown. I'd watched the first five series of Thrones and I was kind of indifferent to it. I liked it. I thought it was brilliantly done.
Yeah.
But I hadn't really fallen in love with the world. And then when I got the job and went back and watched another 80 hours worth of television, I think it really started capturing my imagination. And then turning up to film and just seeing thousands of people work on it so hard with so much love and commitment from every single department, it just rekindles your own kind of like, actually, this is really pretty special.
Yeah, what a privilege to speak to you and to be on the periphery of it. So,
thanks for having me.
We'll be keeping a close eye on what you're up to next. Anything on the horizon and that you're allowed to share?
I'm in the new Magic Mike film.
Yes. This is as far from typecasting as you can get.
I don't strip, which is a shame. I don't dance, which is a tragedy. So I'm in that. I think that comes out next year at some point. I've just finished filming something for Apple TV. I'm in Napoleon, the Ridley Scott film, for a flash in the pan.
Wow.
That comes out next year at some point. Nice thing on the BBC.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Busy.
Yeah, doing a play at the National over Christmas as well, which is...
Lovely. Well, that's only down the road. We'll definitely come down for that, Gavin.
Dragoncast night out.
Yeah,
maybe.
Exactly. That'd be fab. Yeah.
It's a very good bar.
Gavin, thanks so much. Chris, thank you as always. See you next week for... what again is going to be a whole lot to unpack. We've broken our record, make no apologies, and thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Let us know your theories down below on the YouTube comments, or get in touch with us at Dragoncast Pod, or all the usual places. We love hearing from you. It really makes a difference. Until next time, Dracarys. Don't forget House of the Dragon airs exclusively on Sky Atlantic at 2 a.m. every Monday, then repeats that same evening at 10. You can also get it on demand via Now. If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for Dragoncast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. Dragoncast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, produced by Connor Driscoll, edited by Buddy Peace, and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.
Mom.
mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.